There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula One. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you're not one of them.
No, you want to.
Keep up the good work, and there you have it. There you go. With the qualifying.
Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. I'll be joined by Nasser Hamid, my co-host. This is podcast number 1059, September 2nd, 2024, Nasser.
I say Mamma Mia at Monza. Spaghetti culture cooks up a winning lasagna through the Lesmos. Car 33, are you feeling like car 44? Toto says crashing is all good. And folks, legend of legends from the world of motorcycle racing is in the Palatial Studios today. We shall explain molto gladly. Back to you, Senor Rogers.
Thank you, Nasser. On today's program, Leclerc makes everybody happy in Italia. You can feel the tension between the drivers of Piastri and Norris. The strange and bizarre slowdown at Red Bull, with Max admitting the car is stinko. And whatever happened to Felipe Massa's court case? This week's interviews...
Giacomo Agostini, 15 times MotoGP world champion.
And don't forget, yes, we do need your contributions to keep this program up on the servers. So please just click on the Support F1 Weekly tab. You know you want to. Nas, Monza was wonderful. How you doing?
Will you please tell our listeners what part of France are you in? And how is the authentic escargot in your area?
Well, Nasser, I'm in Charente-Maritime, close to Angoulême. It's out in the country. It's a beautiful part of southwest France, and I'm loving it. And no escargot so far. We had Indian food this evening, and it was fantastic, but it's a beautiful part of France. A lot of British and Dutch people travel here for vacations, and it's simply outstanding, Nasser.
Very good to hear that. Okay, let's get going by saying greetings and gelato regards from Milano. What an incredible performance from the local team and their driver from Monaco. The race and weather was a hot one. The Tifosi's hearts were melting as car number sweet and fast 16 crossed the finish line after 53 laps of the newly repaved Autodromo Nazionale di Monza, my all-time favorite track, and I would go so far to say, along with Spa, this is also a heaven where you can visit without dying. Given the pace of the McLaren cars and both starting from the front row, it should have been an easy-peasy 1-2 for the team. Because Mr. Brown now has a lovely car and two very fast whippersnappers. The opening lap of the Italian Grand Prix for 2024. The move Piastri put on his teammate to grab the lead, and this is what we want in motor racing, reminded me of Montoya's pass on Schumacher at Interlagos when he was driving for Williams. That was a statement made by Monty saying to one of the all-time greats, I am no Rubinho or I'm not the Colombian Eddie Irvine. But pretty close to it in terms of attitude, I would say. You know, some people are saying McLaren should issue team orders and help Lando Norris win the championship. This is what they were saying when Mark Webber had a pretty decent lead in the championship over Sebastian Vettel in 2010. Red Bull's pure racing response was, we have provided tools of the trade to the drivers, and they have to win the championship on their own. No team orders. Looks like McLaren is doing the same thing, and not for the first time. Piastri taking the lead did not surprise me, but Lando, who fell behind Leclerc in the early going, was not able to lasso in the prancing horse, and that did surprise me. But nowhere in the first half did I think we will have a serious gelato jubilation at the end of the race. My hope was, this is Monza. We want to see the Tifosis go home happy with at least one of the prancing horses on the podium. Question for you, sir. How did you see the race and the podium panning out before Ferrari decided on one-stop strategy?
Well, I was very impressed with Oscar Piastri's testicular fortitude on that pass. It was awesome. And he's tired of Norris and his crying, and he's decided to be the new machismo. I was very impressed. I thought Piastri might win this, but I didn't have a clue about Ferrari's one-stop strategy. So I figured there could be team orders coming at McLaren, and everybody was waiting on pins and needles. Did not happen, and Ferrari surprised us with the one stopper, and it was very impressive. And you know what? The Tifosi, the Pope, and Ferrari needed this win, Nas.
If McLaren keep the advantage of top pace and continue to slaughter the Red Bull with what Zak Brown calls two number ones, it may come back to haunt him. We have seen this movie more than once at McLaren. As somebody said at the end of the 2007 season, McLaren snatched defeat from the jaws of victory. With eight races remaining, numbers do add up and say Lando can win the championship in certain scenarios. Realistically, I don't think it will happen. And who knows, time may prove me wrong, not for the first time. Max still has a huge cushion. Cars are reliable. I don't think Max is the kind of driver who will ever go into cruise and collect mode. But time and circumstances beyond his control may force him into that situation. His best, whatever it is, in the remaining races, 4th, 3rd, 5th, 7th, whatever, I think will be enough to give him 4 in a row, just like the first Red Bull Wunderkind, Sebastian Vettel. Going back to two number ones at McLaren, let's call it Lando and the Dingo Bite. We all know two tigers in one cage do not work, especially in motor racing. But I think there's more to the story than what we know or we see. A driver by the name of Fernando Alonso made the fatal mistake of going behind his manager, Signor Flavio Briatore, and signed with, of all the people, Ron Dennis, on his own. I am convinced if Briatore was in the loop and involved in negotiation to put Machismo at McLaren, he would have made sure he got it in writing from Mr. Dennis. Fernando Alonso is number one driver at McLaren for the duration of his 3-year contract. And who do we have as manager of Oscar Piastri? Mark Webber. He was grilled pretty badly at Red Bull, Multi 21 in Malaysia, front wing gate at Silverstone, carved up in Turkey by his teammate and management. At Red Bull, he was the lone warrior. I think he is putting his experience of crash and burn to good use to protect his client. And who can blame him? If you recall, I said on the podcast when Daniel Ricciardo joined McLaren, and this was after he was coming from a high of a couple of podiums with Renault, and a tattoo somewhere on Cyril Abitbol's body, that one of the drivers will bite the bullet. We all know the answer now. I now have a feeling that same thing will happen between Piastri and Norris. Piastri is a top dingo. He is not in Formula 1 to be Lando's lapdog. I think if Piastri had signed as a confirmed number 2 driver at McLaren, and honestly I don't know what the contractual terms are, I think in that case, he would be receiving calls like, Lando is faster than you. Mr. Rogers, your take on Piastri's pass for the lead and the team order situation at McLaren. Should they or should they not?
Well, like I said earlier in the program, Piastri's pass was awesome, and Norris thought it might have been a little risque, but in the end, this is machismo Formula One. But in the end, and thinking about the hunger that Zach Brown has for the World Championship, I think we will be getting team orders, and it's going to sit in the gut of Piastri for a while before Mark Webber has a little talk with him. That's what I think.
Moving on, we look at Lando's seven deadly sins. You know, a lot is said about Charles Leclerc unable to win from pole position, and same is the scenario with Lando. He has not won a race from his seven pole position. And of course, all of them were with McLaren because that's the only team he has driven in Formula One so far. And I got this information from Autosport.com. And it shows who was leading at the end of the opening lap. It is interesting. We shall start with his maiden pole position, which came at Sochi in the Russian Grand Prix. And race leader at the end of the opening lap was his Carlos Sainz Jr. Once upon a time, they were teammates at McLaren. On to pole position number two. This was for the sprint race of the Brazilian Grand Prix last year. And no surprise here, Max was leading the race at the end of lap one. Third pole position for Lando also came in a sprint race, this time for the Chinese Grand Prix this year. His fellow Briton was leading the race at the end of the opening lap. His name, Lewis Hamilton. You may have heard of him, Mr. Rogers. Back in the days of Vodafone McLaren, he did ring somebody's bell. But that's another story we can talk about some other day while enjoying Ruffles sour cream chips. Fourth pole position in Barcelona this year. Russell was the race leader at the end of the opening lap. Pole position number five at the Hungaro Ring, where after a long debate, Lando had to let his teammate pass so Piastri could take his first win, and Piastri had also led the opening lap. Then we come to the Dutch Grand Prix at Zandvoort. Local boy and already a legend, Mr. Max, led the opening lap. And of course, on Sunday we had Monza. Piastri won the McLaren battle at the end of the opening lap, but McLaren team lost the war at the end of the race. You may ask yourself, what are papaya rules? And that was the first time I heard that phrase also. This question was put to Zach Brown by Nico Rosberg, and let's listen to Zach's response.
Papaya rules.
Yeah, what are they?
Yeah, what are they? And was Oscar following the papaya rules, or what, did he go beyond them in turn four?
No, the papaya rules are, you know, it's your teammate. Race them hard, race them clean, don't touch. That happened. It was an aggressive pass, so that's a conversation that we'll have. It was a bit nerve-wracking on pit wall, but it's really just, you know, respect your teammate. You know, Lando got a bad run out of that corner as well, so kind of opened the door a little bit, but yeah.
Finally, a few words about the race winner. The win has come at a very good time and the best place in Formula One.
Lots of emotions. I mean, we stopped quite early, but still too late because Lando actually undercut us. And there I was, okay, maybe the race is going away from us. And also Oscar had a good pace. But I didn't demotivate myself. I kept pushing and tried to keep those tires just to have most freedom on the one or two stops. We wanted to make the one stop work at the beginning. Then we saw Red Bull struggling with the hard and we're like, maybe the two stops is better. So that's why we stopped early, and then there was a long way to go. But then once the two McLaren stopped, I found a lot more grip, not having the dirt here of Oscar in front, and the pace came back to us. So from that moment onward, I was like, why not try it? And the team obviously said it as well. So we were both aligned, and it's great.
Leclerc lately has been frustrated, a common malaise in Maranello, not only by lack of pace, but team strategy calls. Even on Sunday, he was questioning the call. I hope he keeps the winning momentum going, as we all know who is coming to dinner on New Year's Eve in Maranello. Halfway through the 2025 season, we will find out who is the restless spirit on an endless prancing horse ride. Anything else you liked about the race, sir, that we can talk about here before moving on to other big news from Monza?
Well, the biggest impression I had, there was no crashing from Williams. Cola Pinto did a fantastic job, and I loved every minute of it. So it was great. I thought Leclerc winning in Ferrari is always the best for Formula One. So in the end, papaya rules or not, it was a great Grand Prix.
Well, the other big news coming into the Monza weekend was, since Logan Sargeant was preparing for his SAT exams for the London School of Economics with the help of Nicholas Latifi, his seat was taken over by Franco Colapinto. He also did his Formula 2 duties over the same weekend. This is his scorecard. Yes, he did not put the car on pole, nor did he lead a lap, but he scored a lot of brownie points with his team and sponsors by not crashing and bringing the car home in one piece at the end of the Grand Prix. Your Grand Prix debut at a high-speed track with such historical importance as Monza has to be a very high-pressure cooker environment. Overall, I think he did a pretty decent job with what he had to work with. I must say, and this is what I was hoping, not just for him, but any rookie that comes in, that the driver beats his teammate, which in this case would be Alex Albon, and that would have really turned a lot of heads. Easier said than done, but some have pulled it off, like GV at Silverstone and MS at Spa. We will have more on Colapinto later, but Mr. Rogers, right now, I know you're disappointed your favorite driver is no longer on the grid. What is your expert opinion on Colapinto's first Formula One race?
Colapinto did a fantastic job, and I loved every minute of it.
Next, we move on to Car 33. Where are you? Six races in a row, we have not seen Max on the top step of the podium. This is now looking like he is driving for Toro Rosso or doing a JB in the second half of the 2009 season. Max has not won a race since the Spanish Grand Prix in June. Since then, he has been on the podium only twice. It was not too long ago we were talking like this about his teammate. What a difference a year makes. Last year, he had 19 wins from 22 races. This really shows no matter how good you are, and Max's find of the century in terms of racing talent, absolutely no question about it. But you still need the best package to deliver. And with that, we come to F1 Weekly's public service message, which we do once in a while. Those who thought Lewis was only winning because he was in the best car, I think it's time for them to check into the local Starbucks and order an El Grande cappuccino to wake up to racing reality that is showing its wonderful face in 2024. The edge is gone at Red Bull. Adrian Newey will be gone after this season. Honda will be gone after next season. Where do we go from here? Some say for Max, Mercedes. I say McLaren is a good option too. So the question for Le Host, how long do you think before we see a press release from a team saying Max will be their numero uno in 2026?
Well, the interesting part is Toto has said he's left the door open in 2026 for Max. But there are also other places to go because Max is the machismo talent. So it's hard to say. I honestly think right now that it's best for Max to just stay put and stay calm and carry on.
Well, this was a heavy-duty motor racing weekend. We had very hot Formula One in Parco Monza, sports car racing in Austin, Texas, MotoGP in Aragon, Spain, and we had the pleasure of old Milwaukee with Indy cars going round and round. There was a lot of chatter on the Interwag before racing action on Sunday. Free practice, very costly for Kimi Antonelli. Toto's teenage Max has started his Formula One learning experience with the Big Bang Theory, homeschooling at Autodromo Nazionale di Monza by going off the track at Parabolica, and you are always at high speed there. Good news is, despite car and ego sustaining damage, he is doing very well, so that's very good. Toto's words of encouragement before Kimi even got out of the car were in the true spirit of keep calm and carry on. All good, Kimi, all good. If only James Vowles was so trifle polite to Logan, he would be saying the same words about 20 times per season, I reckon. Kimi has the talent, so no question about that. Hopefully he will put this down to live and learn and really become Toto's next big thing. Some of us remember a certain world champion going 3M and requiring a lot of scotch tape on his car after crashing in Montreal, Melbourne and Mount Fuji. So what is your expert opinion, lay host, on Kimi's carambolage? Irrational exuberance, or this is the reason they have Formula 3 before Formula 2 and Formula 1? What say you?
The positive side of Kimi crashing 10 minutes into that practice session was he's got the crashing done, and he puts it behind him. He felt guilty. He apologized to everybody in the crew. But now, really, it's how he performs in the next shot at getting into the car. But, yeah, I think it's all good. Toto's very loving and forgiving.
And, sir, speaking of James Vowles, I read that Mrs. Schumacher, Corinna Schumacher, Mick Schumacher's mama, got into the face of James Vowles because he said Mick was nothing special. Well, hate to say this, but truth hurts. James Vowles saying he said, use those words with reference to Ayrton Senna and, you know, people at that level. So I don't know how ugly it got. It was obviously done in public view, I am told, but maybe we can get some more information on this on the next podcast. Okay, sir, Dutch treat for Team Haas. Get out of jail card for the North Carolina-based team after debt to Russian high society paid and Formula One car delivered. Gini was allowed to get out of the bottleneck his team was in and leave the sand dunes of Sanford for the Italian Grand Prix. So that's good. We don't want legal issues affecting motor racing. Moral of the story, keep your enemy close and any Lenox City closer. Don't mess with the missionary man or the lawman. He's got the bailiff on his side. And with that, we come to Penny Lane. De Niro talks, Bullshito walks. More on Colapinto. One website said it best. Williams F1 team has fired a pay driver to hire another pay driver. Formula One can be so predictable. Apparently, close to $500,000 is being paid per race by Colapinto's cronies to put Argentina back on track. According to several published reports, this deal for $500,000 was first presented to Red Bull for Liam Lawson. The good doctor running the junior program gave a bottle of Johnny Walker to James Vowles and said, keep walking. Mr. Rogers, are you shedding crocodile tears or maybe alligator tears since Logan is from Florida on him being a no-go in Formula One moving forward?
No. Sargent had his chance. He was a pay driver, but they really did go over and beyond what anybody would have done for Sargent. So no, he needs to move along, and I'm sure Scott Speed is texting him.
Since you are in France, shall we take a Perrier or an Evian break and return with Motorsport Mondial?
On that note, Nass, why don't we take a quick break, and we'll be back after these brief messages.
Hi, I'm David Coulthard, otherwise known as DC, and you're listening to F1 Weekly.
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. And now, as we spin the globe and go around the world with Motorsports Mondial and the king, the Swami himself, Nasser Hamid.
Okay, today we're going to start the Motorsport Mondial with an interview. And this is with Giacomo Agostini. The great Ago was one of the biggest names in 1973 when I started following motorsports, along with names such as Jackie Stewart, Emerson Fittipaldi, Ronnie Peterson, and Bjorn Vordegaard from the world of rally. Giacomo Agostini won the Isle of Man 10 times, which is absolutely incredible, and he was 15 times world champion. Even the great doctor Valentino Rossi could not beat his number of wins, 123. I am extremely thankful to Signor Agostini for his time and Miss Maria Guidotti, the communication manager at Mugello Circuit, who made this interview and meeting possible. Our conversation took place in Bergamo, which is just north of Milano. Agostini's house is up on a hill, and next to his house is his private museum, and he gave me a 10-minute tour of that, which was absolutely fantastico. You can imagine how many trophies he has there, and quite a few bikes from MV Agusta, where he won most of his races and championships, and his last win was and championship was with Yamaha. Interestingly, when he left MV Agusta for Yamaha, his first race was at Daytona, and he won on debut. He told me he is moving the museum to a new place soon, where it will be open to the public. Please enjoy this conversation with one of the greatest legends in the entire world of motorsports. Okay, folks, I'm here in beautiful Bergamo with the great Ago, Signor Giacomo Agostini. Sir, thank you so much for your time. How are you today?
Grazie. I'm very happy. Just we finished the MotoGP in Aragon yesterday and Formula One in Monza with winner is Ferrari, so everybody happy.
Yes, and Signor Marquez got one win on Ducati finally. How do you rate him?
Yeah, it's... I think he have a, before the race, I think he have a possibility to win because he like very much Aragon and he always very fast. And also the last few races is very, very close to the first and second. So he have a good race and he try very hard in front of his people. And it's important he win one race because after few accidents and he come back like before, I think.
Okay. And how is your friend doing, number 46 these days, the doctor?
What is my?
Your friend?
Yeah, Valentino was a good rider and he win a lot and he make one era of the, after Agostini, we have another Italian and can win a lot with... of course, not with Italian bikes like Agostini, but with the Japanese. But still, the rider is Italian, so it's very important for us.
Yes, absolutely. Okay, you were born in Brescia, a very important city in terms of motor racing history. Did you ever go to see the Mille Miglia when you were young?
Yeah. Because I'm in a few years, I'm in the college in Brescia. And sometimes I go out from the window because I don't have allowed to go out to watch the start of Mille Miglia because it was fantastic, you know. I love motorcycle, but also the car because it's always engine. So I like engine. I like the noise of the engine.
Now, like Max Verstappen in Formula One today, you were very quick from the moment you got on a bike. Was it all pure natural talent? Or was it years of riding on winding mountain roads around Lake Iseo, which helped you develop your skills?
I born with the passion of the bike. So my family have nothing to do with the two wheels. And no, we don't sell any bikes. My father have another job. But I don't know, I think from the Madre Natura, I have this... what is gift.
Right.
So when I am very young, I think always about the race and I think I want to race with the motorbike and I start to race.
I understand your dad bought you an Alfa Romeo, so you don't go racing on two wheels, is that correct?
Yeah, it's correct because at 18 years I can race, but I need the permission of my family. And one day my father said, okay, I'd like to give you a present. And he buy for me the Alfa Romeo Giulietta Sprint. I'm very surprised because that time was a very, very expensive and very nice car. And I said, okay, I am happy about this. And but after I understand, he buy the car because he want, I forget the two wheels.
Okay, now, Commander Ettore Enzo Ferrari was 10 years old when his father took him to his first motor race. And he wrote later that the sensation, excitement he felt from the sound of racing engines, it was something he could never get it from anything else. Do you remember the first race you went to, and what do you remember most from that?
My race with the motorbike.
No, the first race you went as a spectator, as a fan.
Okay, yeah, I remember one motorcycle. I watch a Monza.
Oh, really?
I go to Monza, I'm so young, and I dream race, but I don't have the age. It's impossible. Until 18 years old, it's impossible to start. And I remember, I am just, the field at Lesmo, I go down to the grass, and I have to watch the bike. And some people take me my legs and take me out. And I look, it was the police. Because, no, it's too dangerous, you cannot stay here. But I remember the time I dream and I cry because I think, oh, it's fantastic if one day I can do like this.
Yeah, Monza is beautiful. How important was the role of Mr. Morini in your racing career, especially in the early days?
Yeah, it's good because I start with Moto Morini and I buy my first bike. And after I win with my private bike, and so Morini come to me and say, I like to give you the factory bikes. And also I pay you €100, is $100 a month, is the salary.
Oh.
I say, okay, at that time it's not so bad. And because before I, with my private, I spend my money. So, and I start to win. And so I win a lot with Morini. And 1 year I win 2 Italian champions. And after I be a professional with the 250 Morini, and I win the Italian champion. But in the end, he don't want to race for the world champion because he says it's very expensive. And my company is too small company, and we don't have enough money to spend to participate at the Grand Prix. So I changed to MV Agusta.
Now, this was my next question. You were Italian champion when you got a call from Signor Mani inviting you to come for a meeting with Count Agusta at 4 p.m. How long was the wait, and what was the first question he asked you?
I wait more than 5 hours. I wait more than 5 hours, and but always the secretary said, Mr. Agostini, just waiting. I'm sorry, but the Conte Agusta was very, very busy. And when I go inside at 10 o'clock in the evening, he said, I say, good evening, Signor Conte, Mr. Conte, good evening. He said, who are you? Who are you? I say, I'm Agostini. Ah. What do you want? Maybe I make a mistake. Maybe it's a wrong appointment because when you say, okay, the Conte Agusta like to talk with you, like to see you. And after I say, okay, I like to race with your bike because I understand maybe he like to prove me, he like to joking with me. And he say, okay, tomorrow go to Monza and test the bike.
And the test was not complicated, right?
No, because when I arrive in Monza, I see the Birilli.
The cones?
And the long straight. I say, what is this one? Yeah, because Conte Agusta wants you to do like this. But I say, listen, Mr. Magni, but this one I do when I have 9 years old.
Yeah.
I say, but okay, Conte Agusta like to prove you, and he like to joking with you. So... No worry, do what Conte Agusta wants. And after I go back to the office the day after and we sign the contract.
Well, the wait was worth it because you won so many races and so many championships with MV Agusta. How was Count Agusta to deal with? And I heard his Rocky, I think it was his son or nephew.
Son.
He was very different.
No, he's the son of his brother.
Okay, nephew. So.
No, but... I understand. Yeah, he's the son of the brother.
Yeah.
Corrado Augusta.
Yeah, Corrado. And so how were these two people to deal with Count Augusta and Corrado Augusta?
But with Domenico Augusta was very, very good relationship. He's always very serious. No, he's the boss, and I'm the
employee.
But I know he loved me, he liked me, and I have a good relation because he also loved the motorcycle. Many times he come to the workshop to check is everything okay, if it's the engine, what is it. He liked to be informed about all development the bike. But when we change, Rocky Augusta, the son of Corrado, the brother of Domenico Augusta, he don't understand about the bike. He don't understand, so he come and to be a director, but we have some misunderstanding. And also at the end of the year, I understand the bike. We don't have any development with MV Augusta because after many years, the two-stroke engine coming, and the two-stroke engine have more possibility to development the engine every year. So at the end of the season, I decide to change.
Okay. Now, before you signed a contract with MV Augusta, you also had an offer from Gilera for more money. How did your dad convince you to sign with MV Augusta?
Yeah, because after Morini, I have MV Augusta and Gilera. But I go to Monza for testing, and Gilera come with one bike, one mechanic, and with the three wheels truck.
Okay.
You know, the truck with only one bike.
Yeah.
And the other side, MV Augusta come with eight mechanics, four bikes, and a big truck.
Oh, wow.
And my father say, but Gilera pay me the double. He offered me double money. But my father just suggests me to sign with MV Augusta because MV Augusta was a big company, 3,500 people work, technology because he makes a helicopter. So and my father said, okay, it doesn't matter if you don't make much money, but you have the technology, you have the power of the factory, so. If you have a good rider, maybe you make the money later. So he convinced me, but it's easy to convince me because when I see all the stuff and everything, I think, okay, MV Augusta is more professional and it's more money for development, not for Agostini, but also. Yeah. I take the good shoes.
Good.
I choose the good way.
Yeah. It worked out very well. Okay, 1965. Signor Agostini arrives on the Isle of Man for the first time, finishing third behind Phil Reed and Mike Hailwood in 350cc. What was your impression of this incredible race and the layout of the track?
It's incredible because it's different than every circuit. First, is one lap is 60 kilometers. Second, the race is 360 kilometers. So three races, like the other circuit is The other Grand Prix was 120, 125 kilometers. So this is three times the race we normally... also the safety is incredible. But for riding, it was fantastic because you have the feeling, the emotion is different than other circuit. And also because he's world champion, so... I must go. I must race because otherwise I lose the point. And I win 10 times. But the first year I was very, very difficult because you need the time to learn all. Because 60 kilometers is, 60 kilometers in the morning when we do the train, the practice, we make only three laps. So three laps is difficult to understand 1,000
right. corner. And I heard you say in an interview that you experienced four seasons in one lap. The weather changes?
Yeah. In one lap, sometimes it's four seasons. Because we start in the morning for practice. Example, we start at 4:45 in the morning. Uh-huh. And we stop at 6:45. Wow. Because at 7 o'clock, the track is open, the road is open for the people to go to work. And sometimes we start with foggy and the rain and go to the mountain foggy after sunshine, you know, one lap with the same tire. And so we have maybe we see four seasons.
Yeah. Now, your MV Agusta teammate in 1965 was Mike Hillwood. In racing, there can be very intense rivalries, like we saw with Senna and Prost and with Rossi and Lorenzo. How were you and Mike able to stay friends during and after your time as teammates?
Yeah, because when I meet Mike, we race together with MV Agusta. For me, it was important because I learned from him, because he had more experience than me. He started to race with the big bikes 3 years before me, or 4 years. So he have a lot of experience. So I say, okay, I must learn from him. So I check, I see him, what he do, and so on. And I learn, because after 1 year, I can compete with him. And many times I beat him, he beat me, and so it's good, you know, it's good good fighting.
Yeah.
No. And also he was a very, and after when he changed, go to Honda, and still the good relationship, because he was a very gentleman, and he understand when he win and when he lose. When he lose, always don't take any excuse.
Yeah.
He give the congratulation to the rider winner.
Right. Now, I want to ask you a question, because he was very famous for his lifestyle. You know Dr. Helmut Marko of Red Bull, right?
Who?
Dr. Helmut Marko of the Red Bull Formula One team.
Yeah.
I was talking to him in July, and he was telling me a story that 1 year in South Africa, after a Formula One race, Mike Hillwood got so drunk that three or four people, including Dr. Marko, they had to carry him to his hotel room. Do you have some stories like that you can share with us?
No, I think for maybe the first time when I meet Mike in Italy, the first race both with MV Agusta, and just he come to Italy. Normally, when he come to Italy, it's holiday, just because it's easy for him to beat everybody. And of course, in Italy, it's and Riccione is the beach, Movida, and so and. And every night drinking or some discotheque or some nice girl. When I meet him for the race, I win. I'm very surprised also, because I say, okay, I beat Mike Hillwood. And but after the week after, we have another race, and we don't see Mike after 7 o'clock in the evening. We don't see him anymore, because just he understand. If he want to beat Agostini, he must
focus,
and he must keep 100%.
Yeah.
You know, he must do the serious life.
Absolutely. Okay, now you have 123 Grand Prix wins, 15 World Championships. The 1966 championship came at Parco Monza. That had to be a very special day for you and your Italian fans.
Yeah, it was fantastic, because I live at 25 minutes from Monza, and a lot of my fans come. It's that day is about 130,000 people come, and I win my first world champion. So I'm happy, and so. But I think it's so important, and I don't understand very well what happened, because I remember when I wake up at my home in the morning, Monday morning. I watch television, I read the newspaper, and I start to cry. Because only that time I realize I am world champion, I win, and I remember when I'm younger and I dream to start to race, and now after a few years I am world champion. So sometimes I say, no, it's not true. but it was a very, very, very big emotion.
Yeah, you know, some like this, and there was 1968, Ludovico Scarfiotto winning at Monza in a Ferrari. These are very, very special moments. I want to ask you, and I heard you say this, and it was very, very emotional for me also. Your story of meeting Italian miners who were working in Belgium after you won a race at Spa. Can you please talk a little bit about this and Tell us what they said to you.
Yeah, I remember one of my races. I win in Francorchamps. I'm in the podium, and I see a lot of people come around and so, and many Italian people. Ago, Italian, fantastic, and so. And after, when I go down, I meet all these people, and these people is like my father, because I have 24 years old, and these people crying. And I say, I'm very surprised. Why are you crying? Yeah, we cry because tomorrow, when we go to the Miniera, the Carbon Miniera, we go down 1,000 meters, a Marcinelle. Marcinelle is the city where mm-hmm. And we go inside, and we go with our Italian flag, and with everybody who say, today we win. So for him, it's fantastic. No? When I see these people crying, for me also it's a big emotion.
Okay. This is very interesting. Fangio was taken at gunpoint from his hotel by Cuban revolutionaries. I'm sure you know that. And you were taken from your hotel room at gunpoint by East German police. What did you do?
I don't remember. What is that?
The German police, when you were racing in East Germany?
Yeah.
The police came and took you from the hotel?
Ah, yeah, because the day before I crashed. No, the day during the race I crashed, uh-huh. And he took me to the hospital, and he make medication and so, and surgery, and after, okay, you must stay here, and this room is about 1,000 people crying, complain, and so. I say, what you do, what I do here? It's not very important accident. It's something broken, but not very bad. I say, okay, I go to the hotel.
And without telling them?
I think it's the hotel, I don't remember. It's a Karlmarstadt hotel. Uh-huh. And I go back to the hotel, I go to my room. And I see my mechanic, I say, okay, so I just say it's broken something, but not very, very dangerous. And after, some people locked on my door, and it's the police, three police with a gun. I say, okay, you must come with us. Why? No, you come. Some because you go out from hospital with no permission. So he take me again to the hospital.
That is funny. Okay, now after many years and many championships with MV Agusta, you joined Yamaha. And this is a beautiful story. Your first race with them was at Daytona, not too far from where I live now. After winning your first race with Yamaha, you asked Kenny Roberts, who went on to become world champion, so who is the world champion? Can you give us a little background of this?
Yeah, because when I arrived in Daytona in 74, as a General Motor gave me one car, the white Chevrolet with Agostini 13 times world champion. Because at that time, I'm 30 times world champion. And very happy. The day after, I read in the newspaper the interview of Kenny Roberts. Kenny Roberts, he was the American champion. Very good rider, very fast rider. And he said, I'm sorry, he said, but the world is not Europe, but the world is America. I am an American champion, so I am world champion, he said. I no answer because, you know, I'm a guest of Daytona. So I say nothing. And after I'm not in pole position, I'm only fourth or fifth position. But after one lap, I lead in the race, and I win. I win the race, but in the end, I'm very dehydrated, and the doctor make quickly the injection to me because it was very, the day is about 45 degrees, and so I finish, and I'm destroyed. And after I go to the podium, and I see Kenny, and I say, okay, I see Kenny, and I say, okay, Kenny, I think today you understand who is the world champion. And I say, Ago is not umano.
Very good. Okay, now the same Kenny Roberts, plus two other American champions, Eddie Lawson and Freddie Spencer, race for your Yamaha Marlboro Agostini team. What was your assessment of these riders, and how was your working relationship with them, and who was the fastest of these three?
I think very fast was Kenny Roberts. But Freddie Spencer was very, no, sorry, Eddie Lawson was very, very, very professional, and he win three world champion with me. And he was a very serious guy and very, very professional. Spencer was very, very fast. But when he finished with Honda, I try with him, but he come back. I hope and I think he come back like before, but still, it's he lose something. It's not like when I meet him. The year pass for everybody, so yeah. It's difficult to
keep going.
Yeah.
Okay, and were they easy to deal with? Because you know, racing drivers and racing riders, they are very determined and they want things done their way. Were you, working relationship was good with all three of them?
No, I don't understand. Good.
Your working relationship with Roberts and Spencer?
No, just friendly. Just we see sometimes each other to some revival. Just Kenny, I see Kenny 2 weeks, 3 weeks ago in England at Goodwood Festival of Speed.
Okay, you know Spa, we talked about, it's famous for Eau Rouge. How is Eau Rouge on a motorbike? Is it one of the best tracks that you can do on a motorbike?
Ah, Rouge.
Is that the most thrilling corner in MotoGP?
Le Rouge, what is the Rouge is...
You know, when you come down the hill, you turn left and you go up.
And you go up.
Radion.
Yeah. After the hairpin, you go down.
Yeah. Yes, exactly.
This is, I think this is very difficult. And I remember that corner always, I am one of the fast because I like very much this one because it's also was the most difficult because you go down, you turn left and quickly right and do go to the... To up of the small hill, I like this corner because always I have a small advantage.
Very good. Now going back to Isle of Man, you I think you won 10 times out 10 of times. 16 starts. That is very, very impressive. What was the most let's just say important or memorable win for you?
Isle of Man is the race most important, most difficult in the world, and most dangerous. Because we lost a lot of friends, and but the emotion and the feeling to ride in Isle of Man is different than other circuit because you have everything down, up, first gear corner, sixth gear corner, jumping, everything for season.
Yeah.
So you must be very, 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 very professional, and you must also. To learn, it's important to learn the circuit. Because to learn the circuit, we need 1 year.
Wow.
Yeah.
Now in 1967, you were dominating the race and the last lap, the chain broke.
Incredible.
What was that the biggest racing disappointment of your racing life?
But, in Isle of Man, you know, nobody can beat Mike Helvoet. And that day, I leading about 8 seconds in the last lap, I broke my chain. I dreamed the victory because for me also, for everybody, to beat Mike and Isle of Man is another victory, you know. The victory is more important. And I remember when I arrived after I crying and I arrived to the paddock and before he go to the podium, he come to me and say, okay, Iago, you are the winner today. I say, okay, Mike, thank you very much, Mike, but I am the winner. You say you are the winner, but you go to the podium.
But he did invite you to his party, right?
Yeah. The evening, he said, Iago, you come with me for party. And I like you, come with me. So I was very, very gentle, very nice guy.
Yeah. Now, most drivers, racing drivers, work all their lives and dream of driving for Enzo Ferrari. What was the reason you said no to Signor Ferrari when he offered you a drive? And I understand there were three drivers he was testing, you, De Adamek, and Giunti?
No. Not testing three, just alone. And when I test, he said to me, Iago, if you want, I can give you one car for race. And I thought, it's for me, I'm waiting 3 days before the answer because I think every day and every night about this big offer. You know, race with Ferrari. But in the end, I said, okay, when I burn with the motorcycle in my head, not with the car. I like the car, but I think about motorcycle. Why now I have to change when, at this moment, I have everything. I win every week. I in the podium every week. I already world champion a few times. Why now I have to refuse what God gave to me? Yeah. So I say, I'm sorry. And Enzo Ferrari say, you're very nice. I agree with you. I understand.
Do you still follow MotoGP regularly?
Yeah.
Passion is still there.
Passion is with the two wheels.
I love it. Last question. Of all the drivers you raced against when you were racing and to the present day, if you again had a MotoGP team today and you could hire three drivers or maybe five drivers for your team, who would they be from the time you started racing to now? Who have impressed you the most that you would like to have them in your team? Let's hear some names, please.
I think Valentino Rossi.
Of course.
Marquez.
You like Marquez that much, yeah, huh?
Marquez, very good. Today, Bagnaia and Martin. And also Bastianini is not so bad.
Yeah. What about from the time you were racing? These are all present drivers.
Yeah, I have Mike Elwood, Phil Reed, Kenny Roberts, Barishin, Saarinen, Pasolini.
Yeah, Saarinen unfortunately was killed at Monza with Pasolini. Yeah. How good was he, Saarinen?
He was a good rider. Yeah, good rider, and so also he's a good technical guy. He prepared himself his bike, and his bike is always very good.
Yeah. Apart from Isle of Man, what was your favorite track where you raced?
Well, I have Monza, Imola, Assen, and Franco also. It's a little danger, but Franco also, because it's like a road, you know, you must pass it. Yeah.
Mille grazie.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Moving on, sir, we have points to ponder on Colapinto. In business, there is a saying, 80% of your business comes from 20% of your customers. In the business of Formula One, there is a saying, 80% of the drivers are powered by pesos and not performance. So nothing new in replacing a rich kid from Boca Raton with a rich kid from Buenos Aires. Actually, Colapinto is from a town called Pilar, which I believe is not too far from what you call Buenos Aires. Sargeant was karting world champion and also did very well in both Formula 2 and 3. For me, it was a case of rushing a driver to reach the pinnacle of motor racing ASAP. A common theme I see with young drivers, especially when speaking to their entourage, which most of the times is the papito, and in a few cases it has been mommy darling wearing the diesel jeans in the familia. We interviewed Logan when he was in karting. When I asked him where he was based while racing in Europe, his response was Lausanne, Switzerland. And this is where Philip Morris' European operations are also based out of. If you are racing in Europe in your karting days and living in Lausanne, it is pretty obvious Daddy is not operating the cash register at the local 7-Eleven. I wish Logan had done another season in Formula 2 so he was better prepared for Grand Prix motor racing. But that is in the past. He has now been checked out of Williams and Formula 1. The cash register at Williams is now ringing with millions and millions of dollars, desde Argentina. Franco Colapinto has been racing in Formula 2 this year and won a race at Imola. He first came on my racing radar when he was competing in Toyota Racing Series in New Zealand. A few years ago, he was very competitive, and I thought it would be nice to see a top talent from Argentina back in Formula 1 since the glory and race-winning days of Carlos Reutemann. And the Toyota Racing Series, which takes part early in the year, is now called Formula Regional Oceania, still powered by a Toyota engine. Past three seasons, Colapinto, CV shows, fourth in Formula 3. In 2022, he was ninth in his first year of Formula 3. In 2021, he was sixth in Formula Regional Europe by Alpine, which is also known as Fracca, and I'm going to their race at Imola this weekend. As we can see with these results, they're impressive, but Colapinto is no talent like his fellow Latino, who won the first nine races in his first and only season of British Formula 3, or the talent who won 10 races in his first and only year in single-seater racing in European Formula 3. Let's hope history is not repeated at Williams and Colapinto can make a point that he belongs in Formula Uno. Job number will be to rattle the cage of teammate Alex Albon, as is always the case. Colapinto has still Yas Marina to sink or swim in the Piranha Pool, as Sainz will be in that seat in 2025. We wish him all the best. In the past, we had Frankie goes to Hollywood. Let's hope in future we have Franco goes to Formula One full-time. Senor Rogers, do you see Colapinto in Formula One in 2025, or are you already crying for Argentina?
I'm not really sure. It's really hard to get a read on one Grand Prix. At least he didn't crash. He finished the race. I was very impressed. And he finished, I believe, 12th. So those are good results for a first race. And let's just keep an open mind and keep our wits to ourselves, because it's going to take time for him to get up to speed. But I think he'll be here next year for sure. We'll see. We need Argentina to be on board, so I'm very excited for him.
More motor racing from Monza, Formula 2 and Formula 3. Zayn Maloney, known as Boy from Barbados and the man who won the opening two races of the season, was hoping for win number 3 after taking pole position from championship leading Isaac Hadjar. Sprint race on Saturday was won by Ollie Bearman from 8th on the grid. So this is good for him as he's moving up to Formula 1 with Haas next season. Feature race on Sunday is longer and more points. Great win from back of the grid for Brazilian rookie Gabriel Bortoleto. He is now second in the championship behind Hadjar. And I must say that he was helped by a safety car situation where he was able to dive in and change the tires while the other top drivers had to do a tire change under green flag situation. But still a great win. And you take them as they come. Formula 3. Monza was the final stop for the 2024 championship of this series. For the title, it was basically Battle of the Paisans, two Italians. Leonardo Fornaroli, leading the championship by 1 point coming into Monza, made a good start by taking pole position for Sunday's feature race. Red Bull junior Arvid Lindblad lost any hope of winning the championship as he was unable to post a lap time and had to start both races from back of the grid. But he did a very good job in the second race. So let's take a look at the sprint race first. Tim Tramnitz, German Red Bull junior, took his first victory of the season. Sebastian Montoya was second but got a 5-second penalty for forcing another driver off track, and this demoted him to fifth. Feature race. Now this was an incredible race and I was there to witness this. French driver Sami Megatuniv checked out. Fornaroli and challenger from Sicily Gabriele Mini got into a serious ding-dong battle. Mini had to finish ahead of Fornaroli. It was almost over when Mini passed him, and then the driver from Piacenza, that is Fornaroli, he was passed by another driver, Christian Mansell from Australia, with one lap to go. If the race had finished this way, it was all over for Mr. Fornaroli, who, by the way, was looking for his first victory of the season. But as they raced for the final time on the back straight, Fornaroli had only one ammunition left in his arsenal, and that was to launch a Daniel Kvyat-type torpedo. And I was at Parabolica when he did that, and I had a very strong feeling that desperate people do desperate moves, and they end up in tears. Incredibly, he outbreak Mansell, and it worked. Fornaroli's dive into Parabolica saw him come ahead of Mansell, who was unable to counterattack as he went slightly off course. The record shows Fornaroli did not win a single race in 2024 FIA Formula 3 Championship, but he will sleep well knowing he set a record as the first Italian champion of the series. And just after winning, news came out that he has already signed for Invicta team to race in Formula 2 next season. So good going for him. And he's from the town called Piacenza. Mini had more misery poured on him after the race by the stewards. He was disqualified for minimum requirement with regards to its tire pressures. Interesting. Next, we move on to motorsports on two wheels, MotoGP from Aragon in Spain. Marc Marquez wins in MotoGP again on a Ducati. It had to happen. The man is Max on two wheels. Several accidents and injuries have kept him from the top step of the podium for way too long. But I'm very happy because I'm a huge fan of top talent, regardless of who they are or where they're from. And Marc Marquez is definitely one of them. Next race is this weekend for MotoGP at Misano Adriatico. This is the track which ended the racing career in 1993 of three-time MotoGP champion Wayne Rainey of California. The crash took place when he was leading the race and was also in the lead of the champion, and it left him unfortunately paralyzed from waist down. I met him at the Avon GP race at Laguna Seca. He now lives very close to the Laguna Seca track in Northern California. Now we come to WEC, World Endurance Championship in Austin, Texas. Like any other racing series, all the way from Formula 1 to Formula 4, this day and age, the result is not reserved till the stewards have their say. This time, the race-winning Toyota drivers, led by Kamui Kobayashi, Nick DeVries, and Mike Conway, got a Bon Jovi CD from the stewards. Shot through the heart, and you're to blame for disrespecting the yellow. The drive-through penalty allowed Ferrari 499P of Robert Kubica, Yifei Ye. We interviewed this Chinese star a few years ago, and if I remember correctly, when I met him, he was managed by, and I met that gentleman also, by the Papito of Neil Jani. So small world we live in. And the third driver is Robert Schwartzman. He is originally from St. Petersburg, Russia, but now racing under an Israeli flag. He used to be in Formula 2 as part of the FDA, but he's still with the Ferrari team, which is good for him. Now we come back to the USFA, IndyCars from Old Milwaukee, the state fairground track, older than the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, which was built or started racing there in 1911. So I think the Old Milwaukee, not Old Milwaukee, but the Milwaukee State Fairground track, is probably the oldest racing track where racing is still going on this day and age. Now, back in the day, Michael Andretti, and I say this in a very positive way after watching him race there many times on telly with my buddies, he was an absolute animal on this track. It was a double header. Pat O'Ward was the winner in race one. In Sunday's race two, Scott McLaughlin had the animal instinct and won the race. Fellow Kiwi Scott Dixon was second, and in doing so delivered a Tom Carnegie moment. It's a new track record. He was on it, and with his 142nd podium in IndyCar racing, he surpasses the previous record of 141 podiums set by Mario Andretti. In the Formula 2 of Indy cars, known as Indy Next or Indy NXT, Louis Foster is the champion after taking his 7th win of the season. And I said it last year, I said it this year, I'm going to say it again. We're going to see and hear about this kid who was from jolly old England quite a bit in once he moves to IndyCar racing. This is very good talent. Now we come to money matters. Arrivederci to Ferrari from Spanish bank Santander. They will probably appear at Williams with Carlos Sainz Jr. next season. Santander on red 44. I don't think so. Okay, folks, we finally come to Musical Mondial. The race was at Pista Magica, so we have to invite Mr. Steve Miller to the Palatial Studios for some mighty fine guitar work. Thank you for listening, and please enjoy Abracadabra. Bye-bye. I heat up, I can't cool down. Got me spinning round and round. Yeah.